Welcome to the Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising supporters podcast. Stick around for interviews, analysis, fan stories, and our love affair with Phoenix Rising. And now, to kick things off, is your host, Niall McCarthy.
Phoenix Rising family, thanks for joining us. We've got a great show lined up for you today. This episode has been updated with an interview with Phoenix Rising General Manager Bobby Dooley, who talks about the facts and the feelings behind Rising's most recent game. Also on the call with Bobby is Matt Robards, a youth coach, a Phoenix Rising season ticket holder, and an analyst on this show. Let's run through this introduction and we'll get right to that interview with Bobby. The US Open Cup will be providing us with a ton of entertainment this week. Kelly McCarthy joins us on the show for a look at the upcoming games, potential cup sets, and she's got a few stories about the US Open Cup from past years. John Morrissey, who goes by @USLTactics on Twitter, is with us for a look at the news and results from around the USL that matter to Phoenix Rising fans. We're excited to have John back. One of the most exciting updates is about our former captain, Solomon Asante, being back on the pitch, not for Phoenix Rising, but for Indy 11. John talks about Solo's performance in his first appearance for Indy, including a reflection on his unusual positioning on the pitch. Finally, our last segment on the show is a game preview of Phoenix Rising's next game. It's the last game for the month of May. It's an away game. We're going to the East Coast. We're going to play Hartford Athletic. I'm excited for that game. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for spending your time with us. Enjoy.
What's up, football-loving maniacs? This is Devin Kerr, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Bobby and Matt, welcome to the show. It's been a rough few days for the players, the staff, and definitely for the Phoenix Rising supporters. The game against New Mexico United was scheduled for Saturday, May 21st. Earlier that day, we heard it was postponed because covered personnel within the Phoenix Rising organization tested positive for COVID. Not long after that, it was announced that the game was rescheduled for Tuesday, May 24th, just 3 days later. A modified version of the team traveled to Albuquerque to play New Mexico United on Tuesday and lost 7-0. That's the big picture. Bobby, thank you so much for joining us. Can you bring us up to speed on the facts and the feelings about what happened?
Unfortunately, last Friday, as our team was gathering at the locker room to travel to Albuquerque and fly over there, one of our players, who was en route to the facility, has let us know that he developed some symptoms. So, of course, we went into protocol mode, and our athletic trainer, Brennan, does a fantastic job. Immediately, we tested him. We have tests on site so that we can, we're prepared.
Gotcha.
For situations. You hope that you never have to use them, but we're prepared. And he of course tested him, and then we made sure that once we got the positive result, that we took the necessary steps, isolated him, made sure that the player was comfortable and healthy and has what he needs. And then we went through the covered persons list and just made sure that anyone that was in close contact and spoke to each of the players, and obviously we train together. We, do ice baths together. We are in the training room together. We're in close proximity. And so once that took place, we of course notified the league immediately. I was actually on the phone with the league in real time. Hey, we got a positive case. We're in the process, just so you guys are aware. We have a flight taking off here in a couple hours. I just want to bring you up to speed and where we're at. Went through the protocols. Anyone that's deemed a close contact has to isolate for 5 days, whether they have symptoms or not. And so at that point, it was between the players and our medical staff. They identified individuals, and ultimately we had to isolate the group that we isolated. And at that point, we told the league what was available to us, and we'll stand by and wait for the direction. And we were told the match would be postponed and get healthy. And so That's what we did. And we worked through it. And we're kind of waiting and seeing what was available to us. And it was in the league's hands at that point.
Amazing. So just to be clear, the protocol, what is the protocol for that person who wasn't feeling well and then tested positive? So for that individual, what's the protocol for them?
Yeah, that so it's 5 days that individual has to isolate as well. Same as the any close contacts. And then everyone has to, the individuals that are deemed close contacts have to test in order to rejoin the group. And so we did those tests yesterday afternoon. And unfortunately, one of the individuals that remains asymptomatic tested positive. So that individual has to go into protocols for 5 more days before they can exit out. So I'm really proud of the group, that identified, that said, yeah, I was a close contact, I don't have any symptoms, but this is the right thing to do. And so every player, every staff member did the right thing. And I think that's what makes me so proud of the group, because by taking that step that we did on Friday morning, if we weren't going through the protocols, that individual who, yesterday we found out would have been traveling, would have been on the field playing and exposing people on the airplane, exposing our own team, so do things the right way. And not happy that it happened, of course, but happy that we followed the protocols. And that's what transpired.
For sure. And I get it that we're proud of everybody who said, yeah, I was a close contact, because, if they went under the radar, it would have been relatively easy for them and they would have got to play this rivalry game that was just building up to be something that was really special. So, Matt, do you want to jump in here? Do you want to talk about maybe what the league said?
Yeah, actually, I had a question along those lines, Bobby, if you don't mind. As you're on the phone with them in real time, I think it was very weird for us as supporters who have been around the game a lot, who follow teams in other leagues, for this to be rescheduled so close to that original date. I mean, you can look through the calendar and look at, 15 other Wednesdays throughout the season that this could have been replayed at a later date. Was there any indication as you're on the phone with the league telling them, hey, look, we got all these guys, we have this, positive test going on. Was there any indication from them that they were looking at this Tuesday as the reschedule?
Initially, no. Again, as this all transpired and we fill out the necessary paperwork, we isolate the individuals, we let them know what's going on. That was kind of, our Friday, right? Canceled flights and just get everyone out of the facility. I mean, we do a lot of deep cleans of the facility just to begin with, just, pre-COVID, just from a sanitary perspective. We arranged another one of those. And that was kind of it, right? We'll be in touch, we'll follow through what we have to do and start to test guys, hopefully out of isolation as early as Tuesday. And again, go from there. And we didn't spend a lot of time. I didn't spend a lot of time with the league. Of course, hey, we're available when you would have that conversation. Obviously, we're very fortunate here in Phoenix. So our ownership group is, we have our own facility, our own venue, where we have a lot more control over available dates. And so we, the initial, I guess the ball is in the court of New Mexico to say, hey, what dates are available. So we, I spoke to New Mexico on Friday, let them know, what happened. And we're very sorry. We hate that it happened. Of course, we didn't want this to happen. And we'll do what we can to make dates work that are work for you. And that was kind of it. And then, I didn't hear much from the league the rest of the day. And then I got a text message on Saturday morning that told me 8 a.m. hey, we're playing on Wednesday. And I was a bit caught off guard. I was surprised. So of course I picked up the phone and gave the league a call and expressed the challenges. One, we're keeping everyone, out of the facility, not together. It's hard for us to commit to something that we're we don't even know if we'll have eligible guys. Who knows what Tuesday looks like when these guys are testing, potentially testing out. So It's hard for us to commit to something, whether it's booking flights or buses or hotels or anything, because we don't know if we'll even have a team available. And I'd hate to schedule it again just to find out Tuesday afternoon. So it's difficult. And then, you know, on top of that, we are traveling tomorrow morning to Hartford. And that's not an easy place to get to for us across the country. You know, there are not a lot of options on flights. And so we said that there's a big challenge there. And I got the feedback pretty clearly that it was taking place on Wednesday. And at that point, we discussed internally and said, ultimately, if it has to be Wednesday, can we please have the game in the middle of the day? And the reason for that was, again, player safety being at the forefront of any of our decision tree. We have a flight to Hartford again tomorrow morning, now Thursday, and we just didn't want to have to, there's no way to get back after a 7 p.m. game on a flight to bus 8 hours on overnight straight to the airport to then fly across the country all day is not healthy, right? So we said, that was kind of where we left it off, and that was it. And, you know, we explored some flights. We reached out to our travel agent, who is most of the teams in our league work with, you know, to try to explore flights to see if we could move it to Friday, to move Thursday. We told the league this is what's happening. Again, we were trying to figure out solutions once we were told that we have to play on Wednesday. And as we worked through that, nothing was showing up. And then I got word later on in the afternoon that the game was going to be announced. And I said, no, we can't do that. So if it's going to be on Wednesday, if that's it, can we do it earlier? Cause we wanted to be able as an organization, get the guys to Hartford as well. We didn't want it to have an impact on multiple games. Right. So we offered up, this was Saturday. We even offered up Sunday as much as we didn't want to, but Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday, just so that we could get back to Phoenix in time to travel. Right. We knew at that point that even though the individuals that are in isolation were going to start testing out potentially as early as yesterday, that they weren't going to be available and to travel and participate. And so we asked for that exemption for academy players, and ultimately they came back and told us that Tuesday night would be the match. And we bust through the night last night and got back about 5 a.m. this morning.
So crazy. Bobby, wow. There are huge inconsistencies in how the league has been handling issues like this, COVID issues like this. In 2021, Birmingham Legion, they got the win over Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh forfeited that game. And then in 2022, this season, you know, you've had postponements with games that involved Colorado, Hartford, Tulsa, San Antonio, games that have been postponed and have not yet been rescheduled. So why is the league forcing our hand, wanting to reschedule, you know, within days?
Yeah, I think no two situations are the same. And obviously venue availability is a big factor in this. And, you know, dates are already booked and tickets are already sold and flights and buses and hotels are already arranged for, you know, not only us in this case, New Mexico, but, you know, all our other opponents. And it's not easy. So, getting something rescheduled. So have I seen something rescheduled so quickly? No. Obviously there's a lot of different directions and thoughts I have on it all. But I guess ultimately what I have expressed to the league today is that they use this as a learning opportunity. And you know, it's challenging. I mean, the same time that the league was dealing with our game, they're dealing with the situation happening in Tulsa where the Tulsa Hartford game was postponed, the follow-up, you know, last Friday night, the Richmond FC Tucson game. Not to mention just the regular stuff that the league deals with on a game day. So it's challenging. It's not easy. It's not easy for anyone. No one wanted this situation. And so I think there's a lot of things that everyone could learn from this. And as I expressed, I hope that we do as a league and as other teams learn from it, and we could take these and make sure that teams and are not put in the situation that any of us were put in these past 3-4 days, and make sure that it doesn't happen again. And that's that's all I can ask for. And we'll, you know, we'll move forward. And I appreciate the efforts of New Mexico. I appreciate the efforts of, you know, the league in this situation. And we did what we had to do, and we led with health and safety, and we'll continue to lead with health and safety, and we'll deal with it from there.
Right. Matt, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I kind of had maybe a couple follow-up questions, Bobby, if you don't mind. First, you know, you talked about the exemption to the USL rule. And for those listening who might not know, the USL has a rule, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bobby, but you can only have 5 Academy players on the game day roster.
Correct.
And we had to get an exception to that because we obviously had more than 5. I believe 8 out of the 17 were all Academy players. And so this is all happening on Saturday. The game's on Tuesday. I'm sure you guys traveled Monday. I mean, it sounds like these Academy players had maybe a training session with the first team. Would that be true?
Yeah. So they came out before we went to the airport on Monday. So it was all one-stop shop. And again, just really admire those kids. They don't regularly train with us. They weren't expecting it. You know, they're being, you know, this is one of the off weekends for our Academy. They've traveled a lot this spring, and, you know, high school and graduation parties and different things that they got going on in their personal lives, because they spend 365 doing soccer and their families are committed to it. And for them to, you know, give up what they're, you know, they had planned and do what they did and be willing to say yes and come out there and represent our entire club. It's a testament to our youth club. It's a testament to our coaches and essentially what this community and everyone behind it has represented and come together. And that it was an honor for those kids. And I look at it the other way, man, it was an honor that those kids came out and did that for us. So really appreciated what they did. They have nothing to hang their heads about. I'll tell you that.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, you're talking high school teenagers. All of a sudden, I'm sure you and the coaching staff maybe talked Saturday, Sunday about, hey, which guys are we going to call up or which guys are we going to sign here? What was it like for you making those calls? You know, I'm sure these guys, like you said, they were not expecting this. They're kind of sitting at home. What was it like calling them up and saying, hey, we need to sign you to a contract here to come out and play?
Yeah, it was
just in a game, but a game at New Mexico United.
Well, the good thing is that Andy Chapman, who's the director of our academy, he's part of our pro team coaching staff. He's an assistant coach for the first team. He's around us every day in and night, day out. And then, you know, going to academy training sessions at night and just putting in a lot of time. Danny Stone spends a lot of time on the curriculum, on working with our academy. You know, other members of our soccer ops staff spend a lot of time. Rick is a huge proponent of youth development. And, you know, he's out there with our youth club quite a bit, and open invitation for our youth club coaches to be around at any time. So they have a real grasp on what's happening with our youth club, and Chris Brown and what he's done at our youth club and the growth and everything that's out there. So, you know, I did not make the calls. You know, that was Rick, that was Andy, that was Danny. They put the game plan together and got the kids out and knew what kids could respond and help us out. And so they made those calls, and every one of those kids right away. I mean, there was no hesitation. And you know, what do I got to do? You know, whatever it takes. And that's fantastic that they're able to do that. So, you know, that it, what a cool opportunity for them. And I also have to give a lot of praise, not only to the staff, I mean, the support staff behind the scenes, getting the travel done, getting the uniforms made, getting, you know, pulling game plans together on short notice, with new personnel. And then, you know, also the pros and the vets that went there, you know, under the leadership of guys like, you know, Darnell King, Joy Calistri, who didn't, you know, come on the field, was there to support the team as well. I mean, guys like that, that they were, you know, out of position, helping these kids out, and understood that this club is bigger than all of us, and they're fighting for the badge. So, again, I'm just really proud of the group. We went there to try to get 3 points, and I'm proud of the group that went out there and represented the team, and you know, a learning experience for all of us. And hopefully we, you know, take a step forward and stay healthy the remainder of the year, get some guys back that have been injured over time and you know, go get a result in Hartford in a tough place to play on Saturday.
For sure. Bobby, was it ever an option to just tell the league, you're asking too much of us? We can't do this.
Got a lot of pride. You guys, our fans, they support us everywhere we go, and our fans show up, and you guys are working hard, and times are tough right now. Everything's expensive, but you guys are still showing up and showing out, and you give everything for us no matter what. And if there's a game to be played, we're going to play the game and we're going to give it our best effort. And so there was never any hesitation from our organization. Whatever is going to be put in front of us, we're going to embrace it. We're going to take it head on. And we're fortunate that the support of our ownership group, and again, ultimately the support from our fans, has been fantastic. And so no, the short answer is no, we wouldn't do that. You know, too much pride. You know, we're very fortunate to get to do what we do. Our players are lucky to have the fans and support, get to play in the environment that we get to play in 17 times a year. That's not something we'd have done for the players that have been here before us, or the players that are going to be here after us, or the fans that have supported us. We'll show up, and we're not going to walk off the field. We're not going to do that. We're going to do it the right way. And may not be pretty sometimes, but I could tell you the best intentions.
Yeah, it's a difficult question for me to ask you, Bobby, and thanks for just meeting it head on there. So next up, Hartford, and it's literally days away. So are we going to see something similar on Saturday in Hartford, or are you expecting that we'll get the regular roster?
No, we were fortunate. Again, only one individual that was in isolation that unfortunately he tested positive, but so he remains in isolation, but the others were able to clear protocol, and you'll see a different group on Friday, on Saturday. My days are all coming together right now, but you'll see a different group on Saturday, and I know the guys that were unable to participate were really proud and really appreciative of what the, you know, the youth players did, what the other guys did to fight on and represent, you know, the club. And we're going to use this and learn from it. And hopefully, we're going to be on something here. I can tell you that.
Going to be on fire. Hey, Matt, how about some closing comments?
Yeah, Bobby, it was great talking to you, man. I really just appreciate your openness and your willingness to kind of tackle some of these questions here. I know from a supporter perspective, it wasn't, you know, the result we wanted, especially against a team like New Mexico, that I think everyone here in Phoenix might have a sour spot in their hearts for. They're definitely not a well-liked club here. But, you know, it was admirable to see the fight in the team, especially from those youngsters. And I was talking to a buddy of mine about this, and, you know, I couldn't imagine myself when I was 18, what I was doing at 18, and you know, much less playing in a professional game on a couple of days notice. So
I appreciate it. It was, again, there's some, certainly a lot of positives to take away. That first and foremost, our thoughts as a club with the fan, you know, their supporter that passed away, you know, there's, you know, of course we're all one community here and feel terrible that happened, and our thoughts and prayers to them. And our whole world was put in perspective again yesterday, you know, with what transpired. And there's young kids that could have had that same opportunity that those other 16, 17 year olds had with us yesterday. So we still get to play a sport we love, still get to work in a sport we love. There's a lot bigger things going on in the world that things that need to change, and thoughts and prayers aren't enough right now. Things need to change, but our kids went out there, our players went out there, our club went out there. We represented ourselves, and also another moment, again, really happy to see Dev Sandoval on the field for New Mexico as well. And again, we're got to respect your opponent. You got to respect the officials. You got to respect the game. And really happy to see that Dev was out on the field yesterday as well. As much as it hurt us to see the result and what transpired, there's certainly some things to be positive and happy about. So we learn from it. We grow from it. And I think once our group gets fully healthy across the board, we've had some injuries. We really haven't seen everyone together yet this season. And I'm really excited about the team. I'm really excited about the leadership under Rick and the staff and obviously the support that we have all the way through the club and how our fans really had our backs yesterday. And we appreciate that. And I think our players, I know they appreciate that. So just thank you to everyone that was there for us, and we'll continue to fight and push and you guys continue to fight and push us along the way.
Will do. Just to follow up on that, Bobby, please send the players and staff that have been impacted by COVID and by injuries our best wishes for a speedy recovery. And do let the academy players and let coach Rick Shantz and the players from the regular roster know that we're so proud of them for what they did yesterday. And Bobby, thank you so much for coming on the show and for being there for the fans.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. We appreciate it. And stay safe, stay healthy. And we'll see you out at the field here in about a week and a half or so. All right.
Bobby, really appreciate it. Thank you for coming on. Matt, great to see you again.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
All right, guys. Appreciate you guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Greg Hurst, Phoenix Rising striker, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, our boys, Phoenix Rising, made it to round 4 of the US Open Cup this year. They lost out to another USL Championship team, Sacramento Republic FC. We would love to be cheering for Rising now that the competition has progressed to the next round. There are 16 teams remaining. All games will be played on Wednesday, May 25th, and the winners will advance to the semifinals. Kelly McCarthy is here to talk about some of the interesting highlights about the USL Open Cup and to run through a few of the upcoming games. Kelly, thanks for coming on the show. You've been reading up on the US Open Cup. Did you find anything of interest?
I found only things of interest. It is so interesting. Everything about the US Open Cup and its history is incredibly rich. Like, when you asked me to do this segment with you, I was so excited. And the more I read, the more excited I got. And then I realized that actually we have like 20 episodes worth of content. So I'm going to really pare it down for you, but I just want to like underscore as we start this chat that truly every year that you look into, every match that you look into, things that delayed the competition, I mean, all of it is simply fascinating.
Awesome. Okay, so maybe take us back to the beginning. That might be a good place to start. So when did this competition start?
Certainly. So it started in 1913, and I will take you back to the beginning, kind of in terms of its inception. You hear a couple of things regarding the US Open Cup. You hear that it's certainly the longest running cup competition in the US. We all know that. But then you also hear something else that's pretty interesting. So it is among the oldest in the world, and it is also, quote, the second oldest continually operating cup competition in the world. And that's the part that kind of caught my attention.
Okay, continually operating. So I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say that everybody knows the FA Cup and that the US Open Cup is modeled after the FA Cup, mm-hmm. would be my guess. So I'm thinking that the FA Cup is probably the oldest, as you said, continually running cup in the world.
Sure. Well, you got yourself kind of caught up in the strange part of that statistic. So it is indeed the FA Cup, which is now known as the Emirates FA Cup, is indeed the oldest cup in the world. It started in 1871. This is a full like 42 years earlier than the US Open Cup, which I said is started in 1913 and is therefore 109 years old. But the FA Cup is not the oldest continually operating cup. By that, what they mean is never took a year off. So until, you know, and that's how we started talking about this statistic and citing this and finding it interesting was, of course, that the US Open Cup had to take a 2-year hiatus due to COVID. So
right. That was just 2020, 2021. So we're just back from that 2-year off.
Exactly. So our count starts over. But, you know, in terms of the oldest continually operating cup, which is a mouthful, this is pretty interesting. And it's actually the Irish Football Association Challenge Cup, also a mouthful. Now, Niall, you're actually Irish. So can you explain why you've not heard of this cup?
Yeah, that's a new one on me, Kelly. I think you might be, you might need to double check your sources on Wikipedia for that one.
Well, you're right in that Wikipedia is one of my favorite resources, but it wasn't my resource for finding this. And actually, the reason you might not know of it, or that our listeners might not know about this cup, is that it's actually Northern Ireland's cup. It's not the Republic's. It's now known as Samuel Gelson's Whiskey Irish Cup. So what a fun sponsorship. And this cup actually, based on the details I could find, appears to still be continually operating, meaning they did not interrupt for COVID. So it appears that they played on, they didn't pause, they didn't cancel, and they simply restricted their audience size. So, you know, they were the oldest continually operating cup, and no one's going to give them a run for their money in a really long time because they still are continually operating. So pretty fascinating.
So the date that you mentioned there, Kelly, is preceding the revolution in Ireland, and you know, the country of Ireland being split into Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. So exactly. This cup, if I'm listening properly, this cup was on the island of Ireland, and then it lived through the split, and that it continued in the north of Ireland.
That's exactly right. So it was at one time the whole of Ireland's cup. And then due to exactly what you said, it broke apart, or the country did, and it continued on. Yes. But of course it has sort of fallen out of favor, or, you know, it's less followed now that it simply, you know, operates within Northern Ireland.
That's amazing. So already we've gone down a rabbit hole. We're supposed to be talking about the US Open Cup, and now we're talking about something completely different. So before we just get back to the US Open Cup, just remind me again, how does the FA Cup fit into this?
Oh, the FA Cup is actually the oldest cup in the world, the oldest tournament. But we're cited, the US Open Cup is cited as being the second oldest continually operating. So I was curious, what is the first oldest continually operating?
So am I correct in thinking that the US Open Cup is modeled on the FA Cup?
Yep, you absolutely are. Although, you know, many of the cups across the world are similar, you know, follow a similar model.
Open divisions, open to amateur clubs, as well as professional, various divisions and tiers. Okay.
Exactly. Cool. So moving on to just some fun historical facts, if you will. And again, our audience needs to know how much I am tempering myself here. This could be, you know, 20 pages of information, but just a couple that really I felt like I needed to share because they're kind of cool in terms of the evolution of the cup tournament. So just three things I want to highlight for you in terms of historical facts. Now, the first is that until the 1960s, and quick quiz, Niall, when did we say the Open Cup started?
1913.
Beautiful. One point to Niall McCarthy. So up until the 1960s, the Open Cup ran on a very different timeline. So it used to be from October to April, which was, well, let's just say it was roughly from October to April. So this is a very different, almost a flipped timeline from what we see today. And what's interesting about that is this timeline was based around US soccer schedule, which was much more closely aligned with what we know now as the European timeline for soccer. So I thought that was pretty interesting that we used to be more closely aligned with them. And another thing that's fairly interesting about that was it was a very rough timeline. So there were basically the cup organizers were not great at scheduling the tournament in the early years. It was, as I hinted at earlier, it was very common to see major delays and interruptions. I won't get into them, but of course, in part, some of that was weather because it used to be held over the winter time across the US. But there were years when the tournament took 9 months instead of the 7 it was supposed to take. There was even a year when it took 11 months until we hit that final. So again, I'm not going to get into all of that, but very interesting, very interesting. I mean, they just scheduled this thing pretty willy-nilly.
Well, and we can use our imagination. Like, there's a game supposed to be played in Minnesota and there's an ice storm, and so we're going to have to postpone that game, kind of thing. Totally.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a big thing. Weather was a big deal. And then also they would schedule the games that, and they would conflict with people's league games, and they'd be forced to kind of choose which game they wanted to play. So, I mean, they needed a project manager, let's put it that way. So that's the first thing I wanted to highlight, was just that it used to be on a different timeline. And the second thing I wanted to highlight that I thought was pretty interesting was that we know this tournament as a complete knockout tournament. So, you know, you play one match against a team, whoever wins advances. Well, with only a few exceptions, the US Open Cup final was a two-leg, both home and away series between 1928 and 1968. So for almost 40 years of the tournament, it operated that way, with this two-leg final, as I mentioned, home and away, and then the winner was determined in aggregate.
Oh my God, that's like the current European model. Yep. I love it.
Yep, super cool. So that was the second thing, was the knockout tournament concept. And then the third thing I wanted to mention was, although there have been numerous back-to-back winners, a club that wins it twice in a row, only two clubs in the entire history have won the title 3 years in a row. So the first is the New York Greek American Soccer Club. They won three consecutive crowns in 67, 68, and 69. And then more recently, and I'll tell you the years, and Niall, tell me if you know which team it was, 2010, 2011, and 2012, we had another club win it.
It's an MLS club, obviously.
Yes.
Successful MLS clubs, maybe New England Revolution, maybe Portland Timbers, maybe Seattle.
Okay, this wasn't a guess as many as you can until you get it right, but that's how it turned out. Yes, it was indeed MLS's Seattle Sounders. They won it three in a row, which is pretty impressive. I mean, considering that has only been done one other time. Now, I will give a quick shout out to two teams that have come close, where they had like two consecutive years with, you know, a year in between, and then another win. So the Ukrainian Nationals, shout out to Ukraine. They won it in 60, 61, and then in 63. So they came really quick, really close to that kind of three-peat. Wow. And then similarly, the New York Pan-Cyprian Freedoms won it in 80, 82, and 83.
Wow. Just to get back to Seattle Sounders there for a second, they're out for this year. So they're not in the running at all for this year. And they're actually not doing well in the standings for MLS either. Anyway, sorry, I don't mean to bring you down a completely different rabbit hole.
It's no problem. It's you know, where I like to live. But the next thing I wanted to talk about, and this is the last topic I wanted to talk about as we go down sort of memory lane in the history of the USL Open Cup, is just the concept of the MLS dominance. And this is something that people talk about, you know, since, let's say, the MLS joined American Soccer Pyramid, and joined the Open Cup in that same year, which was 1996, it's well known that MLS teams have been dominant in the Open Cup. Now, people really love to talk about this, and I'm just kind of like, why wouldn't they be? They're the top tier in US soccer. So to me, it makes sense, you know, not to mention we do some things that I think make it a little easier for them to remain dominant, since things like allowing them to enter in later rounds, you know, avoiding those potential cup sets. But what I did want to mention was just, there have been a couple occasions where lower division teams have gone pretty far and or gone all the way since MLS joined. So I just wanted to highlight a couple of those. And then of course, Niall, I know in a minute we'll be talking about sort of what we're looking forward to in the 2022 round of 16. And we've still got some lower division teams in there. So, you know, this year's up for grabs.
Great.
So the first year I'll highlight, the first team is 2008. And in this year, Charleston Battery made it to the final, but lost to DC United.
Awesome.
So moving on to 2017, FC Cincinnati, who are now in the MLS, but were in the USL in 2017, made it to the semifinals, where they lost to the New York Red Bulls.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yep. And, you know, if people want to go down this particular rabbit hole and hear some insights about the FC Cincinnati team and sort of what that transition was like from USL Championship up to MLS, I recommend they listen to the Fan Experience podcast, episode 38. And that episode is entitled, So You Want to Go to the MLS? And Niall, that's the one where you talk to Cincy podcaster and coach Goff.
Yeah, Kelly, you're good. I had forgotten about that. Thanks for reminding me.
Yep, I'm good. Okay, so the last one I want to talk about, and this is not in chronological order, but this is the lower division team that made it the furthest, is in 1999, the Rochester Raging Rhinos. And they went all the way and they had an absolute crazy run. And I really can't recommend, it's like, need a book to read before bed. Like, this is what you should read about. This run is crazy. So I'll give you a few highlights to wet your whistle. And then I encourage everyone to look this up, read about it. It's each round is more and more wild.
Wow. So this is the Rochester Rhinos, who were in the USL Championship League just a few years ago. They took a hiatus. They kind of disappeared off the map. Now they're back with a new owner. Who's their new owner, Kelly?
I have no idea, but you have told me and I have not retained it.
Yeah. An English Premier League.
Former player.
Not former, current player.
Oh.
Yeah. It'll come to me in a minute. But yeah, so he bought them, and rather than, you know, tried to get them back into the USL Championship League, he brought them into MLS Next Pro, which is the weirdest thing in the world to me, why he would do that. But anyway, right. When you say that this team took it all the way, you mean they actually won the US Open Cup?
They actually won. And just to clarify your information there, they are back, as you mentioned, in this new iteration in MLS Next Pro, but they are now known as Rochester New York FC. For some reason, they got rid of the most amazing name, which was the Raging Rhinos. I don't know why you dropped that, but
so, and it's Jamie Vardy was the person that I was trying to think of. But
there we go. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, Rhinos were initially formed in 1996. They were part of the A-League back then, and still again in 1999, which is the year we're talking about. And it took them five games, so five rounds, to win it. Three of those, the first three rounds that they played, they actually entered in the second round, but the first three rounds that they played were at home, and they had absolute awesome support. So that may have had, you know, been a factor in their ability to get all the way through. And they had to defeat four MLS teams in order to win, which they did, obviously. Two of the five games that they played went to overtime. And in 1999, we played sort of different rules than we do now. And they won both of those matches by the golden goal rule.
Oh my
God. So, Niall, do you remember what golden goal is?
Yeah. I used to play golden goal all the time when I was a kid out in the street, and somebody's mother would come out and say, your dinner's ready. And you'd say, all right, boys, next goal wins. And that was the golden goal.
That was the golden goal. That's how it was formed. Another history lesson. So basically, correct, it's when, you know, you're tied at the end of regulation, at the end of stoppage, whatever. You do add on, like we do today, two 15-minute periods of overtime. But the next goal wins. So, you know, in this case, in both of these cases, as I mentioned, two of the five games went to overtime. They got through that first 15-minute period, switched sides, and then in the 110th minute, the Rochester Rhinos scored, ending it and winning that round.
Wow.
So pretty crazy. The next thing I want to highlight was that the semifinal was against Columbus Crew. This was actually played on neutral territory. They were down in Virginia Beach, and they played during a tropical storm.
Okay.
So that's pretty fun. There were actually 60-mile-per-hour winds during the game.
Better them than me.
Totally. I wouldn't even want to be, quite honestly, a spectator to that match. But anyway, they go into the final and they weren't expected to win. So as I mentioned, the semifinal was against Columbus Crew, and the final was actually in Columbus. So you can see that Columbus Crew were favored to win that semifinal, but it ended up being the Colorado Rapids against the Raging Rhinos in Columbus. And obviously the Rhinos won that match as well to take it all.
Wow. Well, logistically, it sounds like a big mess, but congratulations to the Rhinos.
It was crazy. The whole thing, as I mentioned, is fascinating. And the whole research that I did on the US Open Cup was also fascinating. I mean, just every article I read, every year I randomly read about, every club I focused in on, I mean, it was all just sort of rich with drama, excitement, or legacy. So I definitely recommend people do their own research and start at thecup.us is your best resource for learning more. Fantastic. So anyway, Niall, that's some history of the US Open Cup, but let's bring it to the modern day. And do you want to tell us kind of what's happening as we move into the round of 16?
I do.
Are there games you're particularly excited about?
100%. But just before we move on, I've got a question for you. You talked about the US Open Cup being the longest continuously running cup. Why was the FA Cup not continuously run? I know they stopped for COVID, so did we. But what other reasons did they have for stopping?
Well, there have been various reasons, of course, throughout history that different tournaments have been paused, interrupted, or canceled. But the number one, and the one that took the FA Cup off track first, would be a world war.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And in fact, as I mentioned, you know, when you read about the US Open Cup and some of the things that caused delays or caused a reduction in participation, you know, World War I was a major one. We just started up in 1913. And by the time 1918 hits and the US involvement in the war, I mean, participation dropped massively. It was less than half the number of teams because so many people had gone off.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay, bring it right up to date. So we're in 2022. And as I mentioned, we're at the round of 16. We've got 8 games and they're all happening on Wednesday, May 25th. So starting on the East Coast, there are 2 New York teams. The New York teams are obviously New York City FC and New York Red Bulls. They're not playing each other. New York Red Bulls are playing Charlotte, and then the New York City FC are playing New England Revolution. So there's a connection to Phoenix with New England Revolution, Kelly. And that is that their current coach is Bruce Arena. And he was the coach for LA Galaxy in 2014 when Arizona United played in round 4 of the Open Cup against his team, LA Galaxy. And of course, Arizona United became Phoenix Rising. So a nice little link right there.
Absolutely. And it's a good reason for us to cheer against the New England Revs. But regardless of who we'll be cheering for, who do you anticipate winning those matches? Do you have any favorites in
New York? New York City are going to beat New England Revolution, and the Red Bulls are going to beat Charlotte, in my humble opinion.
Okay. All right. Now, we know Charlotte is new to the MLS this year. How have they been doing otherwise?
They're doing okay, but the Red Bulls are doing really well. So that's why I think they're going to take that one. So moving south, there are 2 Florida teams remaining in the round of 16, Orlando City and Inter Miami. So they're going to play each other. And Inter Miami has a player that was once wearing the Phoenix Rising red. Can you think of who it is?
I actually can. I happen to know this one.
Okay. Jamaican player.
Listeners, be proud. I finally actually have an answer to a quiz question. Damian Lowe.
That's the man, exactly. So maybe we'll be cheering for Inter Miami over Orlando, but I think that Orlando are going to win that one. Okay, moving on, there's another one, and you'll notice that so far, these are all MLS teams. So there's one other one that's Sporting Kansas City are going to play Houston Dynamo. I think Sporting Kansas City are not going to win this. I think Houston Dynamo is going to win. We had a player on the Sporting Kansas City squad last year and maybe the year before, Kelly. Who was that?
Absolutely. Amadou Dia. Glad you mentioned him. But unfortunately, he's not with them any longer as he's now with Lucidi.
Exactly.
In Championship League, yeah.
Lou City are in this. Lou City are playing Nashville. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if we would see Amadia show up in the starting 11. But there's another connection to Phoenix, and that is that the Louisville City coach, Danny Cruz, he played soccer in Phoenix, specifically at Glendale High School. And apparently he was one of their standout players back in the day. So there's two connections that we have to that game. So maybe every other day of the week, we'll hate Louisville City, but maybe on Wednesday, May 25th, maybe we'll be cheering Louisville City to beat Nashville.
Well, and everyone wants an excuse to cheer on Amadou Dia. So
yeah, I'm with you. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, there's one other MLS pairing, and that is LA Galaxy will be playing LAFC. El Tráfico. These guys play each other a lot, and there's a really good chance that we'll see players from Los Dos and from Las Vegas Lights on the pitch. So we might, for example, from Los Dos, we might see Remy Cabral. We'll definitely see, I would say, his brother, Kevin Cabral, who's often on the starting 11 for LA Galaxy. And then for LAFC, you know, there's a whole host of players from Las Vegas Lights that they could pull in for that match. So that's LA Galaxy and LAFC. And it's being played in Carson City, so LA Galaxy's stadium. So Kelly, who do you think is going to win that?
I have a couple of thoughts on that whole topic. Well, I think LA Galaxy will win simply because, you know, Niall, you and I went to an LA Galaxy game not that long ago.
Yeah.
We did not go to an El Tráfico game, which would have been awesome, but they were in the stadium promoting El Tráfico because it was coming up. Their first meeting of the 2022 season was coming up. And I recall them sharing that when the two teams meet at the LA Galaxy stadium, LA Galaxy tends to win. Like, I think they're highly favored when they're playing at home against LAFC. So absolutely, I'll just go with statistics. But something else I wanted to mention about that was, you mentioned, you know, both of those teams have two teams.
Yep.
And because of that, our listeners may have noticed that those, you know, MLS two teams were not in the early rounds of the US Open Cup, and that's because they're not eligible. So if you're a two team and you have an MLS affiliate, you're not eligible to participate in the cup because of this shared roster situation.
Really good point, Kelly. Really good point. So there are two games left, and I think I left the best two till last. We've got Sacramento Republic FC, who are playing San Jose Earthquakes.
Okay.
And it's in Sacramento. So Sacramento get to host an MLS team. And, you know, as I said about Louisville City, we can hate on them every other day of the week, but I think we would love to see them beat an MLS team. What do you think?
I'm not with you, Niall. Sacramento knocked us out. And as you know, I'm loyal through and through. This is just asking too much of me to turn around and cheer for them. Now, I will be curious to see how many fans show up, because I was pretty surprised at how few were at the Open Cup match when Sacramento played Phoenix Rising. So I'll be curious if their fans turn out for this.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. So I'm interested to where you stand on this last game. This last game is an MLS team, Minnesota United, taking on a USL team, but not a USL championship team, a USL League One team, Union Omaha. So our connections there, as far as Minnesota goes, James Musa, Phoenix Rising player, spent a year, maybe a couple of years at Minnesota United. And then as far as our connection to Union Omaha, well, we had a trialist who's trying out for Phoenix Rising. His name is Gabriel Claudio, and he tried out for Phoenix in the offseason 2022, wasn't selected, but he went and tried out for Union Omaha. And in the last cup game, he was in the starting 11. So there's a good chance that we'll see Gabriel Claudio take to the field to represent Union Omaha when they play in Minnesota against Minnesota United. So Kelly, There are connections. We have more connections there. Who are you cheering for?
We have more connections than that. And I think, you know, it has to be stated, everyone that listens to our podcast should know that Greg Hurst played for Union Omaha just last year. And there have been a lot of good quality players that have come from Union Omaha. I think there's a player that plays for San Diego Loyal from there, right?
Yep. Yeah, and two of them playing for Sacramento Republic.
Oh, there you go. So on that basis, I am going, first of all, I'm going to be cheering for Union Omaha all the way, but I'm also going to call it for a massive cup set. I'm going to call them as the winners. Now, this isn't based on much except for the inspiration that I found in the Raging Rhinos story. It can be done. It should be done. And I think they just have a lot of momentum behind them. And I think they're a new club, and I think they're feeling like, we can do anything. And when you think you can do anything, you can. So I'm giving this to Union Omaha.
That's so awesome. For anybody who wants to hear more about Union Omaha, we have their general manager, Peter Marlette, on the podcast here in episode 55. And that trialist, Gabriel Claudio, he came on and shared his story in episode 45. Kelly, he's an Arizona boy, by the way. Do you know where he's from?
I want to say Yuma.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm pretty sure that, like, Coach Rick Shantz is also from Yuma.
Yeah. And I want to say, I'm not sure if it made it into the podcast, but I think you guys talked a lot about how he was actually stellar in American football as well, and maybe holds a bunch of records for Yuma high school or something in terms of his American football play.
Yeah. I remember that. Pretty amazing.
What an athlete.
So fingers crossed, I'm all out with you that Union Omaha will take down MLS Giants Minnesota United. As far as the other two games go, you know, Sacramento Republic are taking on an MLS team. They get to host. And I'm not sure that I said that Louisville City, they're taking on Nashville, the MLS team, but they also get to host. So it's really just too bad that Union Omaha are not a lower division team that's also hosting.
Anyway,
we wish them luck and fingers crossed.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll do our part, right?
Yeah, we'll be screaming at the television like we always are. Hey, Kelly, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for doing the research and sharing all that with us. And yeah, here's to Union Omaha.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Niall.
Thanks, Kelly.
This is Rick Shantz, the head coach of Phoenix Rising, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, we're delighted to have John Morrissey from @USLTactics on Twitter back with his segment on news and updates from around the USL Championship League that matter to Phoenix Rising fans. John, there's a lot going on. COVID was a clear winner last weekend, but I know you've got lots more to talk about. So, John, welcome back. I hope you had a fantastic time celebrating your graduation last week. Congratulations on that. And now that that's behind you, welcome to the working class. But let's get right to it, John. What have you got for us this week?
Hey, Niall. Happy to be back, recapping the week of action as always. Unfortunately, I really think the biggest storyline was the COVID cancellations. Phoenix obviously had their game come out of the way. Tulsa and Hartford had a matchup delayed. And then Colorado Springs missed their second straight week, this time against San Antonio. One note there, San Antonio did sign Jordy Delem from the Seattle Sounders. He was fairly key as a rotation piece in their title-winning campaign in Major League Soccer in 2019. Had a good 2020, but he's been riddled by injuries. He's very much in the mold of a lot of their players in that he's capable as a defensive mid, capable as a wingback. And if he finds his health, he really could be big. So something to watch out of an already really high-powered San Antonio side. Moving into the weekend and the midweek worth of action, however, I think one of the headliners for the Phoenix perspective would be Indy's 2-0 result against New York Red Bulls. Maybe not exceptional, other than the fact that Solomon Asante made his debut for the 11, finally. He slotted in on the left wing compared to a usual right-sided deployment in Phoenix. And given that his team was up 2-0, he really put in a defensive shift more than anything. But his work rate was very good. You saw some of that trademark recovery speed from Asante. His touch was a little bit rough around the edges, which you would expect from someone who's been out of the action for so long. But I really think he's going to be able to capture a lot of what made him special for an 11 side that's in seventh and in a playoff spot right now. And meanwhile, New York dropped to four straight losses, something that Charleston also did in their 4-0 loss against Miami FC. Miami is really rolling right now. They've moved into a back three pretty formally at this point, pushing their wing backs high. They looked sharp against the Battery, and they also looked good midweek drawing against Detroit City. Now, Detroit beat Atlanta 3-1 on the weekend. Maxi Rodriguez got himself a goal. He's been a talisman for this side. Something good there has been the way that Antoine Hopeno has finally hit the score sheet in their past couple of games. He's really been one of the most unlucky players in the league in terms of getting really dangerous chances, putting up great passes, and just not getting the kind of goal assist totals to go along. So nice for Detroit there, who's tied with Louisville atop the East. Elsewhere, the big matchup in the East this weekend was Tampa Bay against Pittsburgh. And coming off of that huge win against Phoenix, Tampa Bay continued to roll with a 3-1 win against the Riverhounds. Something that I had identified with them was the way that their central midfielders were just so disconnected in terms of their defending. But I thought the pressure they brought against a usually midfield dominant Riverhounds side was effective. The upset of the weekend, just to round out the Eastern action from Saturday, was Monterey Bay beating Louisville 2-0. And you can't say enough about the defensive organization for Monterey there. They've looked good in recent weeks in this 4-4-2. A lot of it comes down to getting that first choice center back pairing in place. And that solidity has allowed them to experiment a bit up the pitch and really get a decent attack going. Louisville, they're slowing down a bit after what was a fiery start. You have to think that maybe their eye was on this midweek Open Cup matchup against an MLS side, but maybe the slowdown is something to watch. Elsewhere, we had some Western action Saturday night. RGV upset San Diego 2-1 to slide into a playoff position. San Diego is a little bit up and down, but this game was about the way that Rio Grande adjusted, really oriented themselves towards the center of the park and dominated the late stages of the game to get the win. Elsewhere, El Paso drew 2-2 with Orange County. El Paso is up to fifth, including a 1-0 win over the Sacramento Republic midweek, and they're looking very sharp. They're still a darling of the kind of underlying expected goals data. Meanwhile, Orange County seems to be finding form, but they sit 11th. They just can't grind out those wins. They're getting lots of decent performances. They found a settled lineup that seems good, and they just have to take that next step. We saw Oakland get a 1-0 victory over Los Angeles in what was a dominating performance. LA is really on the slide at this point. Yes, they beat Phoenix, but they lost 5-0 in the midweek to Memphis. They're out of form pretty badly. And Oakland integrated Mikael Johnsen. He's a Norwegian player on loan. Took a couple weeks to kind of get integrated into the squad, but he looked excellent in the central midfield for a spunky Roots team that has an outside playoff shout. And then Memphis, as I mentioned, beat Los Angeles 5-0. They're doing really well in the Eastern Conference. Had a game against Loudoun on Sunday that went about as predicted given Loudoun's form. But yeah, that's sort of the roundup for the week. I did just want to take a moment to apologize for missing last week. I've been busy, but I so appreciate the support I get from you, from the Phoenix Rising community. You guys are the best, so thank you.
Hey, John, it makes me so happy to have a recording of you saying that Phoenix Rising are the best. I'll definitely be keeping that for posterity. I'm just kidding. Have a great week, John. Thanks for your updates, and I look forward to hearing from you again next week.
This is Josh Eastern, play-by-play broadcaster for your Phoenix Rising, and you are listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, on Saturday, May 28th, Phoenix Rising FC travel to Hartford, Connecticut to take on Hartford Athletic. This will be the first time the two teams meet, a historic occasion. I'm sure there are lots of interesting things about the club, but the number one most interesting thing I've found about them is that they play Bob Marley's Three Little Birds for the beginning of matches and when the opposing team scores. I think that's pretty cool. I've heard of having a goals song, like when we used to do a little mashup of one of Diplo's songs when Phoenix Rising scored, but playing a song when a goal is conceded, that's next level and something I could really get into, because it's no fun at all when you're scored on in your home stadium and everyone's bummed out. It would be fine with me to have a song playing to get us motivated and out of the slump. So Bob Marley's Three Little Birds, kind of like it. You know, I don't just like it, I love it. I love the song and I love the idea. I think it's good for the fans and it's good for the players. So, Phoenix Rising Game Day Operations, how about we come up with a song that's played when a goal is conceded? I know, we're planning on never conceding another goal, but just in case. Let's get back to previewing that game against Hartford, but first, huge thanks to all of our guests on the show today, episode 57 of the Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising Supporters podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, please spread the word by sharing this episode with a friend. It really would mean the world to us. If you see us on Twitter or Facebook, give us a like and a retweet, and give us a 5-star rating on your podcast platform. We'd really appreciate it. This podcast comes out every Tuesday. Subscribe and follow to make sure you don't miss an episode. We love hearing from you, so send your questions, thoughts, and ideas to thefanexperiencefc@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @fanexperiencefc, and the invitation's always there for you to come on the show and talk Rising. Okay, let's get back to that game preview. The game against Hartford Athletic in Hartford. It kicks off at 4 p.m. Phoenix time, so watch out for that. What do you actually know about Hartford Athletic? Not much, me neither, so I had to do a little digging. They've been in the USL since 2019, and they only qualified for playoffs once, that was in 2020. Since their inception in 2019, they've had 3 managers, one for each season. Typically not a recipe for success. Hartford have been rotating their players heavily this season. They'll line up in either a 4-1-4-1 or a 5-3-2, but regardless of their formation, their midfield usually consists of one hold-up player and 2 box-to-box midfielders. Their style is typically one that works well against Phoenix. You'll often find them in a low block, happy with little possession, waiting for their chance to counter. Their season has not been going well. They've played 9 games, they've got 2 wins, 1 draw, and ouch, 6 losses. Now, their 2 wins were in their last 2 games, so who knows, maybe they're turning their season around, but I don't think so. Probably not, because the 2 teams that they beat were at the bottom of the standings, Loudoun United and Red Bulls 2. These are MLS 2 teams that just seemed destined for the bottom of the standings for the remainder of the season. There's one game that stands out to me, and that's when they played Tampa Bay Rowdies. They managed to get a draw in that game, which is something that Phoenix Rising would love to have come away with that night. Instead, I hate to remind us, Phoenix Rising lost 5-1 to Tampa Bay Rowdies. I know we were riddled with injuries. I know we put in 2 own goals, and several of the Rowdies' goals were lucky counterattacks, but still, Hartford held them to a draw, and I'm impressed. You likely recognize 3 players on the field for Hartford. Forward, Prince Sadie, he's had 23 appearances for Phoenix Rising in 2021, and midfielder Peter Lee Vassell. He had 6 appearances when he was on loan to Phoenix Rising from LAFC in 2019. You might have happy memories about those 2 players, but trust me, you won't have happy memories about this next player that's likely to show up on the pitch in Hartford. Corey Herzog. Remember him playing for San Diego Loyal in 2021? I know, I want to forget that too. A player that we will become familiar with is playmaker and captain Danny Barrera. Danny wears the number 10 jersey and he holds the record for most assists in the USL for the 2021 season. Just one last thing about their players. Their top goal scorer is Joel Johnson. He's got 3 goals in the season, so watch out for him. When you look at these 2 teams head-to-head, Phoenix Rising look to be a far superior team. After all, Phoenix have a 60% win rate, Hartford has a 22% win rate. We've got 19 goals in the season, they've got 9. However, the cards are stacked against Phoenix. We've lost games that we were destined to win. We've a player out on a red card suspension. Some of our best players are on the injured list. We're traveling across the country, playing 2 games in 5 days, and we're dealing with fallout from COVID-19. It's not going to be easy, but that's when we shine. At the start of this preview, I mentioned about how cool it is that Hartford played Bob Marley's Three Little Birds at the beginning of the match and every time they concede a goal. Well, Hartford, turn those speakers up to 11. Get on your dancing shoes because you're going to be playing Three Little Birds more times than you've ever heard when you host Phoenix Rising. One last thing, go Rising! Yes, Hartford, this is my message to you. In case you missed it, it's coming around again. Go Rising!